Good afternoon, Eastern Washington and fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from deep inside the heart of the future Liberty State. Brought to you once again by On Fire Ministries, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story. And the news behind the news, it's not about right or left, it's about right and wrong. It's about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ. And it's about not ending in prayer, but moving to action. It's also about the gospel of the kingdom, Zechariah 2:5, which says very clearly, a message of hope. I want everybody to hear this as we're going to be talking about things in the world today. But I declare, as the Lord, will be a wall of fire to her on all sides, and I will be the glory in her midst. Here is the encouraging note. I'm going to mention a couple things you may never have heard of before, but I have talked about it on the show a couple times. And I really want to have people gain an understanding that the issues that we're facing today were talked about even in the time of the early church fathers in the first three centuries. So I'm talking since the death of Jesus Christ until 300 AD. They talked about these issues. What would happen in the end? And there's a couple people you may never have heard of. One of them is Ephraim the Syrian. The other is Second Esdras, which is a book. It's an apocryphal book, but it was in the 1611 King James Version. And essentially, those two together prophesied accurately. So this is about 200 AD, and then a little bit later for Ephraim the Syrian, prophesied accurately the split of the Roman Empire. And that eventually there would be a second iteration of the Western Roman Empire and the Eastern Roman Empire. And that actually happened. The Kaisers carried that to conclusion, because Kaiser is the German word for Caesar. And the Eastern Roman Empire was carried to conclusion by the Tsars. Tsar is the German, or sorry, the Russian word for Caesar. All of it ending in 1917. Along with the dragon nations of Arabia, or the Caliphate, which was defeated in World War I, the Ottoman Empire, and the Caliphate was officially abolished in 1924. This was all predicted back then. The fall and the split of the Roman Empire, the fall of the Western Roman Empire in 476, the fall of the Eastern Roman Empire in 1453. Most people don't even realize the Roman Empire did not end until 1453. And also the end of the dragon nations of Arabia. And then at the end times, the last times that these things would try to come back again. But as the prophecy says, a lion, and it actually interprets it as Jesus Christ, the Messiah, would come out and speak to this attempt to revive essentially a Roman Empire. And he would say, no, it's not going to happen. And there would be victory over these things for Christians. So as we talk about some of these things that even in the Roman Empire, they talked about a universal way of tracking human beings, a universal way of manipulating a vote or manipulating currency. Just understand that Jesus Christ is always the victor. And even in these prophetic words, way back then, they have been tested by the Spirit and proven accurate. That God still holds us in the palm of his hand. And what he wants us to do in this time is not to shrink back and say, well, it's just going to keep getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And we just need to grab our bag of popcorn and wait until he comes. Well, actually, he's calling us into the harvest field. In fact, Jesus Christ said the prayer should not be for revival or awakening. He didn't mention those. He said, no, the prayer should be for harvesters to come into the harvest field, because this is the greatest harvest in the history of the world. And so I want to encourage you today to be that harvester going into the harvest field. And we have a bunch of opportunities for that to happen here coming up, and I'm going to talk about those here in a minute. But my sense is that many people think that they're not qualified to go into the harvest field. Maybe they're too old to go in the harvest field, when Jesus is calling all of us to go into the harvest field. And in order to do that, in order to go into the harvest field in a way that builds up the body, You have to go into the harvest field and then come back and give your personal testimony about what is happening and what has happened in the harvest field. So don't be afraid of what you see in the world. The Western Roman Empire, what was known as the Second Reich under the Kaisers, ended in 1917. Hitler tried to bring it back under the Third Reich, and it was defeated. The second iteration of the Eastern Roman Empire in Russia ended in 1917 with the Romanov family being assassinated by the communists. Well, if it's trying to come back, it's going to be defeated. Dragon nations of Arabia rose, swept throughout most of the known world, attacked Europe, 528 battles against Europe. By the way, just as a side note, there is a fantastic video on the history of the battles against Christendom. And it compares the very limited battles of the Crusades versus the 528 battles where the Islamic nations were projecting power into Europe, taking over a million slaves. And by the way, that's where the modern slave trade came from. Not talked about today, but that's the history. That is the facts. It's irrefutable, indisputable. People might try to shade it, but can't get away from it, and especially the primary source documents that back it up. So the point, though, is that even with all of that, it collapsed and was defeated in 1917. So if the dragon nations of Arabia maybe come back in Turkey, because Recep Erdogan has turned the Hagia Sophia back into a mosque so that the caliph can be ordained and the Caliphate can be reinstituted potentially on March 3rd, 2024, 100 years to the day it was abolished, it will be defeated. Jesus Christ is victorious. We do not need to be afraid of anything. And in fact, when people try to curse Christians, the great promise of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ is that every one of those curses is turned into a blessing. So the more foul and vile the curse is, well, actually, that's even better blessing. And we need to receive that because Jesus Christ paid for that on the cross 2,000 years ago. He paid on the cross for us to be redeemed. And he didn't just say that he wanted to redeem a little bit. He came to redeem all things and everyone. We just have to receive it. And that's a great difference between Christianity and every other religion in the world. Jesus Christ, our God, came to die for us. He's not asking us necessarily to die for him, although that is the case sometimes. But in virtually every other religion, it's about what you have to do, not what about God has already done. And I hope that encourages you today that he has already paid for that price to redeem even the curses spoken against you, to redeem your life, redeem your family, and ultimately to redeem the entire world, the land of the world, and return to that vision he had in the Garden of Eden, which will come to pass. And that brings us now to a couple of things. First, our video on good versus evil is not a video today. It's actually a post. This is a response to Sean Foyt and what is about to happen tomorrow in Olympia, July 28th, 6 p.m. on the steps of the Capitol, and actually in front of the Capitol at Tivoli Fountain. It's actually there at that fountain. And if you've ever been to the Capitol, it's literally right in front of the Capitol. And I want to just... The bad words are blotted out, right? Okay, so I want to just go ahead and post this right now. This was the response. These guys are talking about, and they're being very open about it. They're pro-abortion, pro-killing of the innocent, pro-mutilation of the innocent. And these guys, they think they're coming to protest tomorrow, when in fact, In almost every case, when they've showed up, some of them have actually given their lives to Jesus Christ. So I want everybody to be praying with us tonight for the people that have a different agenda showing up tomorrow. That God has a divine agenda for them to come into the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And that brings us to kind of a funny video, because we worship leaders, if any of you have been in church, you've met a worship leader, right? And they always are kind of a prophetic guy, and they always kind of want to know quite a bit about you, and they'll talk to you about it afterwards. And we love our worship pastor, Gabe Blomgren, a fantastic guy. But sometimes it can go maybe a little too far. Go ahead and roll the clip.
When I push that old lady down a hill for no reason, cause you still love me, Lord. Even in my darkest moments, when I was in all the wrong places with all the wrong people, when I didn't say thank you at the drive-thru, when I stole a DVD of Shrek 2, when I committed tax fraud, my brother went to prison even though it was me. When I pushed that old lady down a hill for no reason, when I told my friend his dog went missing, but I ran it over, you still love me.
So I hope Gabe is listening to this today, and worship pastors out there, we love you. Sometimes, though, those aren't testimonies. Sometimes it can be a little bit over the line. So we love you, and I hope that was funny for everybody out there that has actually been in church where they have seen a worship pastor try to relate in probably too close of a way. All right, that brings us to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. Coming to us from Technocracy News, J.P. Morgan Chase suddenly terminates Dr. Mercola employees and family members. This is something that has been warned about for many years, that Big Pharma trying to bury one of its worst critics. We don't know. But the fact of the matter is that J.P. Morgan Chase and Big Pharma companies have a close relationship, and it's very odd that now he is suddenly canceled along with all of his family members, and there is no reason, at least as of right now, that we know of, given to him. And it also happened that Chase totally ignored Florida law that prohibits financial institutions from denying or canceling services based on political or religious beliefs. So this is an attempt to create a de facto social credit score system. And if you step over outside the boundaries, you won't have access to your finances. Which, by the way, I just want to speak this out right now. There is somebody listening to Patriot Radio today. God has put on your heart to create a bank. A bank that is a kingdom-minded, biblically grounded bank. Somebody's put it on, you know, God has put it on your heart. Somebody out there right now wants you to just consider this confirmation that we need a bank as Christians and patriots in America. That brings us next to Gateway Pundit. Millionaire crypto influencer found chopped up in a suitcase, sent out cryptic message before death. So his body was found up chopped up in a suitcase in Argentina. And Fernando Perez Algaba's dismembered body was unfortunately found by a group of children. And they found it near a stream. Now, it's interesting because he did post a cryptic message before this. And although he had posted about evil people in the run-up to this horrendous tragedy, it just raises the specter, is there going to be a move, because FedNow is here, against private cryptocurrencies? Now, I'm not trying to imply that somebody is guilty of doing this What I am trying to say is, are we going to see disappearances, people thrown in prison for spurious reasons because they're cryptocurrency influencers or they're involved in the cryptocurrency market? And is this a precursor to a crackdown? I don't know, but it certainly is a question, and it is certainly something we need to be keeping our eyes on here in the next 6 months. Because if more crypto influencers end up missing in prison, because this has started to happen over the last year, then it might be an indicator that an actual one world currency is in the offing, and they're going to start with individual countries and individual hemispheres. And that brings us next to China. China likely providing military aid to Russia, U.S. intelligence port. Travis, didn't we report on this like, I don't know, like a year ago? Look at this. The right has to own being misinformed on certain things. And one of those is this false notion that Russia and China were somehow at odds and that the United States should have helped drive a wedge between them. They have never been at odds. Not since 1919, when the first Comintern met, and they have been working together since then to have worldwide communism. So Anatoly Golitsyn talks about this specifically, that the Chinese and the Russians have always been working together, and they've just been doing it behind the scenes. So this intelligence report coming to us from Epoch Times clearly bears that out. Next on the international front in China, coming to us from Indo-Pac News or Indo-Pacific News, the People's Liberation Army, or so the Chinese Army, rolls out longer-range missiles near Taiwan. This is in addition to the exercises that have been going on, and it is in addition to their ferries going off of their traditional routes. Again, for those of you that need to be caught up, the Chinese are going to use ferries as part of the landing invasion because it's the quickest ways you can get armored vehicles off a boat that has been found to date. So they're just going to turn their ferry service into a de facto military platform. The fact that they're rolling out longer-range missiles near Taiwan appears, as they're going to do this, slow roll this over time, to look like they're staging for the invasion. Now, it may not happen in the next 3 months, although we were in that window there for a little while, and we are going to come into that window again. And when I say come into the window, it's when the sea conditions are most favorable, because Taiwan is a very, it's hostile terrain anyway around the island in most places. So you have to have very good conditions to try to do this. So we're going to be coming into a window again, but in any event, these are the kinds of things that we look for, where they move up missile forces, they move up landing platforms. Next, we're going to be looking for them moving up hospital units. We're going to be looking for them to move up air defense units. We're going to be looking for them to move up a little bit more armor than they already have. And they have a lot pre-staged already on the coast there near Taiwan. So just some things we'll be looking for here in the next few weeks. But it's just one more indicator that something may be in the offing. That brings us also to Indo-Pac News. Japan likely to aid Taiwan if China attacks. This comes from an official source. Japan has boosted its defense budget by 60% over the next 5 years, and Japan would likely come to Taiwan's aid, according to Japanese Defense Minister Toshiro Ino, an interview with The Telegraph. So, we now have high-level officials admitting that there is an alliance forming in the Pacific. We already knew this. And the spending, the military spending, and the rearming of Japan and the rearming of the Philippines is happening right now. In addition to that, the United States is going on a huge military base construction project throughout the Pacific and a whole bunch of different islands. And it just continues to point toward a war in the Pacific in the very near future. That brings us to the Middle East. When do the suicide bombings start here? This coming to us from AM Magazine, Sam Faddis. We all share a border with Afghanistan now. So Adnan Afridi, who was a Pakistani policeman, he pursued a suicide bomber into a mosque in Peshawar, and the suicide bomber detonated his vest. Ali was killed. The mosque was leveled. And this is the only latest example of a spate of terror attacks inside Pakistan. First of all, if you have it on your heart, pray for the Pakistani Christians when you get the chance, get the opportunity. But what Sam Faddis is bringing up here is 140 people on the terror list have already been apprehended trying to cross the United States border in the south. 98 such individuals in all of the last year were caught. So clearly there is the movement of potential sleeper cells into the United States, not only by jihadis, but also by China. The question for our federal agencies is, why is nothing being done to stop it at the southern border when we know this is what they're doing and what's happening? That brings us to the next thing in the Middle East from Deb Kafile. Reasonability law passed, police mass against protesters storming Knesset. I want to back up for a second. Amir Sarfati has done a great job outlining this, but essentially, the Supreme Court in Israel went very progressive and essentially tried to take over the legislative functions after the fact by court rulings that were essentially legislation. And we've seen this happen in the United States. Well, the Israelis had had enough, so they stopped it. And by the way, this is just a precursor to some other things that are going to be coming in the future. The left and Marxist organizations funded from the United States, and some argue tacitly approved of by the administration in Washington, D.C., have been fomenting these protests. But what the mainstream media has not been reporting on are the conservatives in Israel who have been massing in Jerusalem and other cities, who have been coming together saying this is exactly what we want. And again, this is not; these are not little protests. These are in the tens of thousands. So Israel heading in a right direction, just from the sense of morality and propriety in having a check against an out-of-control Supreme Court there. But obviously, Marxists are at work, not only in Israel, they're at work in the United States. And the question for us is, when are we going to have that conversation of curbing judicial power, and how is the left going to try to frame that to curb judicial power against things where we actually have advocated that they be overturned, like abortion, property rights? It's going to be an interesting thing happening in the United States here soon. That moves us next to Russia-Ukraine. Coming to us from Open Source Intelligence, authorities in Moldova announced today that it will restrict the number of Russian diplomats allowed in the country. Embassy personnel will be reduced from 80 to 25. Foreign minister said we agreed on the limit so that there are fewer people trying to destabilize the Republic of Moldova. In other words, he's accusing the Russians of trying to destabilize Moldova, which is in the orbit of the European Union. There have been multiple reports over the last year and a half that the Russians may try to invade Moldova. This is just kind of another iteration of the spat that's going on between the two countries, but it's very clear Moldova wants to be in the orbit of the West. That brings us next to the New Development Bank, which is established by the BRICS nations. So Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa has said it will no longer consider any new projects in Russia due to restrictions and sanctions. So that's very fascinating that this new BRICS bank is acknowledging some, at least, of the harm to the Russian economy that's already occurred. Now we're going to go to one of the more interesting stories. It's coming to us from WorldNet Daily. Congressional testimony, Congress. Americans have been kept in the dark about UFOs. There's a couple of articles on this. I want to just start with this one. So whistleblowers have come forward and said that the United States has had an unidentified flying object, or a UAP as they call it, capture program for years, decades, in fact. This brings us to the Western Journal article, former Air Force intelligence officer drops bombshell. I know the exact locations of the UFOs in the United States. Absolutely, based on interviewing over 40 witnesses over 4 years, he believes that the United States government is in possession of these UFOs, or unidentified anomalous phenomena, or UAPs. And also, it was during this testimony that they have recovered non-human biological material from these craft. Okay, why is this happening? I'm going to step back from this for a second. Why all the talk about UFOs? I believe, and I believe it's scripturally based, that UFOs and this appearance of weird creatures like this is demonic. I also believe that some of this UFO narrative that's coming out right now is to mask some of the demonic activity that is happening in this time. So now, is Congress going to subpoena and ask to see the craft? That would be the logical next step. But I also find it interesting, the timing. Right during all the Hunter Biden stuff, suddenly this comes out, Hunter Biden's plea deal falls apart, and then all of a sudden we're having UFO testimony? Very interesting to me. That brings us to the National Front, coming to us from Open Source Intelligence, UPS and the Teamsters. Look like they have come to some kind of an agreement, and that has averted a strike that would be very costly to the U.S. economy. What has not been talked about is the Democrat Socialists of America's connections with the Teamsters, and I think we'll be talking about that here in the near future. Also on the national front, breaking: Trump lawyers told to expect indictment as a January 6th jury meets. So it looks like another indictment. Or January 6th is coming to us from Gateway Pundit. They're trying to provoke something here. There's no question about that. What we need to be concerned about as Christians is continuing to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ, continuing to be outside the four walls of the church and not get caught up in the fear-mongering coming out of these grand juries meeting that they're trying to attack and come after President Trump. All right. That brings us to a tweet by Victor Davis Hanson. California, and this is on the regional front, California is now spending $500 million to destroy four dams on the Klamath River as a record snowmelt goes out to sea due to insufficient reservoir storage. Another symptom of decivilization, the systematic dismantling of all that brought us security and prosperity. Very well said, Victor Davis Hanson. That's exactly what they're doing. They claim droughts all over the place, and yet they're destroying the ability to store water to mitigate those droughts and also to grow food. They're intentionally trying to reduce the amount of water, and that will have the direct effect of interfering with our agricultural industries and farms. That brings us next on the regional front to Technocracy News. Idaho Christians are compensated $300,000 for rights violations. Our friend Gabe Wrench, doing a great job out there. A Moscow, Idaho church organized a public hymn event where masks were not worn. Three were arrested, several others fined, and police broke up the event. The city council mayor and police chief were in support of the arrests. The offending Christians have now been awarded $300,000 for having their First Amendment rights egregiously violated. Thank you, Jesus. And that is one example of the camp of the enemy being raided and that finance coming into the kingdom of Jesus Christ. All right. I want to talk quickly about elections. This is about our guest today. This comes to us on the regional front. But first, I want everybody to stop, take a moment. I want you to share this broadcast. I want you to go to Rumble, and I want you to follow us on Rumble. way less censorship. In fact, there's no censorship there that we know of. But make sure that you do this and comment, like, share. Every post you see, doesn't matter what social media platform, but specifically take a moment and go to Rumble. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that is going to be joining us tomorrow, July 28th, 6 p.m. on the steps of the Capitol. Travis, let's roll the video.
This is a call.
Blood of Jesus is enough for the sins of the nation, for the darkness of the nation, for the way that our nation's turned its back on God.
To every denomination and every believer.
We bring lettuce worship to every single state capital across America.
To gather together by the thousands to pray and worship.
Join with us as we journey to see the fires of revival burn in every single U.S. Capitol.
All God's people gathered together under one banner.
The banner of Jesus Christ, July 28th, tomorrow, 6 p.m. If you are anywhere near the Capitol, please show up. Make sure your family shows up. Make sure your family on the west side of the state shows up. This is going to be an epic event. Worship, baptisms, and transforming Washington State. Bring the gospel of Jesus Christ to one of the darkest places here in the Pacific Northwest. And one of the ways that we're going to keep godly government and actually put in godly government is through our elections. And election integrity has been a huge issue over the last 15 years, at least for me. We dealt with it in the legislature. It's been, we've had vote by mail here in Washington State for a long time. And we've dealt with concerns, growing incidents of election integrity issues. And so with that said, it's a serious matter. But first, sometimes we need to broach these issues with a little bit of humor.
We're here on the scene in this Republican county where African Americans are being oppressed by horrific new voter laws, forcing them to acquire a legal ID to vote. Excuse me, sir. You're unable to acquire an ID, are you not?
Actually, I just renewed my ID. It's pretty easy, actually.
There you have it. This poor black man has been disenfranchised by racist voter ID laws because he's too ignorant. I'm sorry. Ignorant means stupid. Too ignorant to acquire a voter ID.
But that's what they actually mean with all of this stuff. When you say that somebody can't bring an ID in, that should be insulting to every minority population in the entire country. When you say, well, wait a minute, you're actually too dumb to really know how the process works. So we're going to make sure that you're essentially forced to do it. And oh, by the way, if you get it in the mail, you probably don't know who to vote for. We're going to help you vote. And they bring these groups of people together to basically tell people, instead of teach them how to research, teach them the basic moralities that have made this country great, the foundations that have made this country great. Article 1, Section 32, the Washington State Constitution, which says we need to frequently recur to fundamental principles so that freedom continues to the next generation, paraphrase. And I've talked to friends. We have one of the most diverse churches in Spokane, Washington. In fact, in the whole region, in the Inland Northwest. And people are sick of this, being treated like they're children and you know, saying somehow that voter ID is racist, when no, it's not racist. It just prevents fraud. And it prevents people from trying to take advantage of the system. Why don't we have that? Well, we're going to talk about that today with our guest, Vicki Karp, fighting for election integrity since 2003. She has served as a leader of the election integrity movements, Vote Rescue, and Black Box Voting. She's also a co-editor of the book Hacked, High-Tech Election Theft in America. Vicki, it's great to finally have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Pastor Matt. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Happy to be here.
So I fought this in the legislature literally for 12 years. I just started asking some pretty simple questions, like, why can't we audit the ballots that have been duplicated? Or why can't we audit the computer programs and the algorithms? Why can't we audit the code? Why can't we have people with meaningful access to observe elections? And this was years and years ago, and now suddenly it's kind of come to the spotlight in the country. I don't even really know where to begin, but let's start there.
That was a good attempt, a good effort to try to clean up the non-trans nature of technology in the voting system. Unfortunately, people, especially when electronic voting first came into widespread use in the early 2000s, people in general, voters, were so in love with their technology that they really liked the convenience of early voting. And technology, electronic for me. And so currently looking for to get out of it or try to do anything with it, they trust. But I think now I've been through enough cycles that were been raised about it that a lot of people have concerns, and citizens and candidates, as to how do we really know that our votes are being counted as they're cast. And what we learned in the earlier days of our activities as election integrity folks looking closely at election results for many election cycles in the 2000s, in the first 10 years of the 2000s, is that audits and recounts themselves are difficult to do correctly because of delays involved, because there's still technology involved. And so at Vote Rescue, what we've always, almost from the very beginning, what we propose as the real solution to this problem even though I realize this may sound a little bit Pollyanna-ish to some people, is hand-counted paper ballots in public view when done with a certain protocol, which used to be part of the election code in many states across the country. We actually handled elections for a number of private groups and even the Libertarian Party in some of their elections with hand-counted paper ballots in a very transparent way, which everybody loved once they experienced it.
Well, that really is the issue. I mean, this is what I ran, so I'll give you the scenario and kind of get your reaction to it. We had an election here in Spokane County where 10,000 ballots were hand-duplicated. In other words, they fed them into the machine, and allegedly there was like a coffee stain or a tear or whatever. And so they took that ballot, and then they duplicated by hand a new ballot. That became the original ballot, and the court said, destroy all the old ones. And we said, wait a minute. Can we see if the duplication was done in an appropriate and accurate manner? And they said, no, they destroyed the originals. So that's my experience initially.
Right.
So how do we get around this? Number one. And number two, is there any state in the union or any county in the country that's doing the right thing and allowing duplicated ballots to be compared with originals?
Not that I'm aware of. It's not a problem. I've certainly heard of this, but I'm not that familiar with where it's taken place in the past. I can see the problem right off the bat. It's pretty easy to figure out how that can go wrong. I don't know. I think they just added another way to manipulate election results when they do something like that. I applaud you for trying to get that turned around. I wish I had an answer for you. I really don't, though.
It just seems to make sense. Well, let's move to the other one, which is kind of the hot topic, and that is electronic voting, right? Or this idea of voting machines being plugged into the internet, which in some states that's actually illegal, but it happened anyway. That's the first issue. Then the second issue is the accessing of those machines by who knows who. Then the third issue is, what about the actual code being modified, and how do we audit the code? And people saying, well, you can't audit the code, it's proprietary. Well, wait a minute. If you're going to do voting, you got to know that it should be inspected. So there isn't really an expectation of propriety there if you're going to do voting, voting machine manufacture for the United States of America. That doesn't make sense to me. So talk to the listeners, everybody watching, a little bit about these issues. and how these can be exploited or what the problems are that even I haven't listed.
Well, you definitely have a good grasp on a lot of the layers of problems with electronic voting. And the fact that election software has been secret and proprietary from the start and still is, to me, represents one of the major problems. And only a handful of people in the world have ever really been allowed to review election software that's used in the major voting machine vendors across the country. Back in 2007, the Secretary of State of California decided to run a top-to-bottom review of the voting systems that were being used there, and she invited in some of the top IT professionals, programming people from around the country to review the major voting systems, and they ended up decertifying every single one of them because they found so many problems with the software, although the vendors then claimed that they patched and fixed the problems that were found in that review and got themselves recertified. But here's the problem with all that, Astro Dan, is that we, the regular citizens, who don't have access, if we had the access, most of us who have reviewed software, most of us wouldn't know what we were looking at. And so, you know, based on the inscrutability and all the layers of having to trust somebody else to tell us that our elections are really being run fairly, when we don't really have any way to verify that, has been our problem with the technology side of it really the whole time that we've been working on this. And in fact, back in, I think it was 2008, I think, in the country of Germany, a computer programmer and his father brought a case that ended up in their equivalent of the Supreme Court. They were actually objecting to electronic voting. Even as IT people, they could see the inscrutability of it. And in the end, the Supreme Court, or the equivalent in Germany at that time, they found against electronic voting, and they said that it should take no special technical knowledge for a voter to understand how their vote was being counted. And that's just right down to the basic level, because the way we see it, and I think this may resonate with people if they just think about it, electronic voting really is secret vote counting, because you don't really know how your vote's being counted. You're having to trust any number of people involved in the process. Yes, even if people were able to look at the software, you'd have to trust those people that say the software is okay. But is that the software that was in place on the day of the election? You don't know that. Then you have the election officials most of whom are good people just doing their job. But if a manipulation has occurred remotely, which is entirely possible, they don't know it. So we're still in the end stuck with just relying on somebody else to tell us how votes were really counted. And we just don't believe in faith-based voting. That's what we call it.
Well, I'm going to use that. I'm going to borrow that in the future. Thank you for that, because that's really, really pretty funny, right? I mean, that's what they always say to us, right? We don't want faith a part of voting, right? But now really we have to have faith that just trust us, the vote counts, right? Vicky, I have seen, okay, evidence. Now, some was introduced intentionally to discredit certain high-profile individuals in the United States. We need to be honest about that. And they bid on it, and they shouldn't have. But there has been evidence that has come forward to show anomalies, irregularities. We've seen it just in the mail system here in Washington State, very well documented stuff. Talk about actual evidence, because I hear this all the time. Well, what's your evidence? Show the evidence. There's no evidence. Yeah, there actually is. Mike Lindell always says there's mountains of evidence. I want to get really specific right now. What evidence is there that there are irregularities, that there are anomalies, that we should even be concerned about this, and there should be something done legislatively and at the local level to deal with this?
Well, I have to agree with Mike Lindell. There is a mountain of evidence, and a lot of it came out through alternative news sources and people like you that knew about it and at the time who brought it out. But the court systems, pretty much all of them really did everything they could to make sure they never let those cases come up so that evidence didn't come out. But I'm just going to go back to what got me involved in this in the first place as my first example of evidence. which was in 2003 when I heard Bev Harris of Black Box Voting being interviewed on the radio about research she was doing for her book, Black Box Voting, Ballot Tampering in the 21st Century. And at the time, what she was in her part of her research, she got on the Diebold website, which later may have been one of the iterations, might have been later Dominion. I don't remember because Premier was one of them. They sell off and change names. But anyway, Dominion at the time was it was the second largest vendor of electronic systems, voting systems in the country. And she got on their website. And she found that they left their secret software, their election software, on their site by mistake. She didn't know what it was at first, but she downloaded it and had some computer IT programmers look at it with her. And what they saw there after they reviewed it was that built into the program itself was the instructions on how to come in a hidden back door in the central tabulator where all the vote totals reside and flip results and then exit out without being detected. So it's
so
not
what year was this? What year was this?
It's a feature. She found that in Diebold, not Dominion, Diebold election software. Pardon me, I'll get that straight. It was Diebold election software. And she found it during research she was doing in 2003.
20 years ago.
Software that was posted on their website at the time. So that was the beginning of my getting involved in this because I just couldn't believe that was happening. I thought Watergate was a big deal, but I think this could be a really big deal. And so I still think so. But anyway, that was just the very beginning, but there were other software that was found on other major vendors where flaws like that, like instructions like that were found. But in terms of just taking it up to more current times, evidence of election results being exported out of the country and then coming back, election results leaving, for example, in I think 2008, leaving Ohio and coming to some other state, and then something happened there, and then they were sent back and with strange results. There have been there really are so many cases that show that we should be concerned about this. That I have compilations of articles in about four different filing cabinets, and I'm sorry I don't have that. Didn't pull a few choice ones out for you. I'll just tell you that after studying this for all this time, to me, we just need to get rid of it. I mean, if we care about having honest elections, we just completely need to get rid of the technology and get down to smaller precincts. And we have a model for doing hand count of paper ballots, which if the election, the people who are executing the election are honest people, and that's where you can come into some problems because not everyone is, of course, but that the way that we have designed this program, which is not really us. I mean, it's been used in states across the country over the years, and some of them still allow it in their state election code. A lot of them don't. So that's one of the problems and obstacles that we would encounter is that if it's not in the state election code to allow for hand counted paper ballots, then you're not allowed to use them in an official election. But if you just picture this, where every ballot is numbered, you don't give voters sequential numbers, but they're all numbered so that you know how many ballots you have to start out with. Then you mix them all up and let a voter come in who shows their proper ID, who's qualified to vote. They pick up a ballot. They mark it in pen, not pencil, which can be erased and redone. And then they put it in a ballot box that's in the same room. And then that's how it goes until 7 o'clock. And at 7 o'clock, when the last person who's still voting gets their ballot in the box, they close the voting and then they start the counting process. Then you bring in fresh counters, but you don't ever move the ballot box out of the room. You don't do that. You wait and then you until after 7, you have your counting teams ready, and then you unseal the ballot box and you just dump out all the ballots. And then you also do a count of them, and you make sure that the count of those ballots matches what you started with in the beginning. And if there were any ballots that were spoiled, or unvoted. Those go in separate envelopes. So you have those counted for voted ballots, unvoted ballots, spoiled ballots is a total number of ballots, let's say, that you walked in the door with when you set up the election. And then the number of voted ballots should match the number of voted ballots. It should all match up, so you know exactly how many ballots really were voted on that were legitimate. And then you have counting teams where you have – go ahead.
No, I mean, right. And the, you know, even more concerning to me is the really obvious stuff, like more registered voters – like more votes than registered voters in a count. Like, for example, that happened. That has happened. There's no question about it. This would be part of that, right? Okay. You couldn't have more votes than registered voters if you're doing it this way in person.
No, you could
voter not. ID hand counted.
Voter ID. I don't know if you're familiar, Pastor Matt, with the, ERIC system, the Electronic Registration Information Center, they call it ERIC.
The Soros system?
I don't know.
Okay, go ahead.
The guy that founded it, I know, took on another company he owns, took about $70 million from Mark Zuckerberg for to spread money out in mainly Democrat states. So I wouldn't be surprised. But anyway, this is a system that had come into 31 separate states to supposedly clean up the voter rolls to avoid the exact kind of problem that you're talking about. And here's an example of their great work in Wisconsin, which is an ERIC state, has over 7 million registered voters in a state with less than 4 million eligible voters. How does that happen?
Right.
How does that happen? And yeah, of course. I mean, and when you have all mail-in voting like you do, I think that there's just such a recipe for all these different ways. You can find bags of ballots in the tucked away in the post office and trunks of cars. There is no way to really account for all the ballots with the system that we're talking about, precinct by precinct. You know exactly how many ballots you started with, and you know how many you ended up with. And you count them in public view, and here's the key. The ballot box never leaves the room, and people who voted that day, candidates, can come and watch the ballots be counted, and we would actually have a video on it. We've done this. The Vote Rescue used to conduct elections like this for private citizens groups, and we even did it for the Libertarian Party a couple of times, once at their state convention in Temple, Texas, and they loved it because all the candidates knew who really won, and the ones that lost knew that they really lost. So, no, that ballot box never left the table. Totally transparent system. You have one person at one side of the table who's reading off. We call the reader. And on the other, right across from them, is the person called the tallier, with each person having a witness right next to them to make sure this person's reading off the ballot properly and that person's putting the just hash marks on a page is all it has to be next to the candidate's name or the issue. And so they have that witness there to make sure that they're correct. And then when they get done with all the ballots, they count them and they post the totals right there. So from the local level up, you should be able to trace what the real results of an election are.
Right. We must have this. I actually introduced it when I was in the legislature about returning to poll voting or in-person voting with voter ID. This has to be the way to do it. And oh, by the way, we would actually get the results the same night. One of the most frustrating things, especially for us here in Washington State, is you have to wait like 5 days to really kind of have a conclusive count that the votes. This would actually be done that night. You would have a celebration, or maybe not, morning that night. If you're the candidate, the people would know, and you would have integrity back in the voting system. And oh, by the way, isn't this what they do in foreign countries? Well, it's interesting that the United States military went in when we did elections in Iraq. This is how we did it. They had a little purple finger just to prove that they had actually voted. It's so fascinating that what we did and what we implemented to prevent fraud in a foreign country, we won't even do in this country. It's pretty incredible. Well, we only got about 30 seconds left. If you could, where can people go to find out more information on this?
Well, I'll have to get back to you on that because our website is going to be reactivated soon. So there isn't a place at this time, but I just want to mention that we're working on producing a video of some kind to demonstrate the process as I just explained it to you. And when we have it, we want to send it to you, and then you can get it out there if you like it, you know, make it available to your listeners. And at that time, we'll have our website back up, which is voterescue.org, but right now not active.
Vicky Karp, I really appreciate you, and I really appreciate the solution part of this. We always talk about election integrity issues, and everybody's talking about the problem, but you have a solution. It's a viable solution. It works. Thank you for all your effort and all your fight. God bless you, and we'll have you back on again soon.
Thank you so much. I just want to say this is really not a partisan issue. It should not be. It's just, if you want honest elections, here is a solution. But thank you so much for having me on.
Amen. Vicky Karp for Election Integrity. She's been fighting this issue since 2003. She served as a leader of election integrity movements, Vote Rescue and Black Box Voting, and also was a co-editor of the book Hacked, High-Tech Election Theft in America. Check that out. This is just something, like she said, that should not be a partisan issue. Want to end today with an announcement and a high note. And the announcement is this. You better be there. No, I'm just joking. I look forward to seeing you all on the Capitol steps or near Tivoli Fountain tomorrow, 6 p.m., Kingdom to the Capitol, coming to Olympia, Washington. We are going to see Olympia reclaimed for Jesus Christ and his kingdom. We are going to see the gospel preached. We're going to see baptisms. We're going to see people healed, delivered, set free. They're walking to their destinies. This is going to be a transformative moment. You're not going to want to miss this. If at all possible, try to get there. 6 p.m. tomorrow. And you will see some content from us on social media. Stay tuned. This is Matt Shea. Thank you so much for watching me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you. He is making this generation the greatest one. And the awakening is here. Keep up the fight.